partido de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. So, you've done something you're really proud of. Or maybe you've acquired something, anything, a degree or a guitar. Maybe an automobile, or maybe you've discovered something, a great new restaurant, or a beer, a recipe, or maybe it's a cure for some hideous disease. Maybe you have a new girlfriend or boyfriend, and maybe you just want to pass along your discovery or knowledge. I would love to hear somebody, somewhere, look at who or whatever it is that puts that bounce in your step, and have that person go, yeah, that thing, that person, that achievement, whatever it is, that's really cool. But instead of that smile or applause you were hoping for, you get the undercutting, balloon-popping, buzzkill, stealth gut punch. They're always sneaky, insecure pricks who get their rocks off by pissing on your parade, aren't there? In sports, these were the psych-out assholes, right? They lacked the chops to win legit. So they would try their little gimmicks and mind games and ploys to put you off balance so they could win. Those assholes are way, way worse than an asshole like, say, Lance Armstrong and his blood doping. Imagine instead of Lance using methods to enhance his own performance, he found a way to diminish the performance of competitors. Like, say, he could spray around some invisible, colorless, odorless gas that would make people lethargic. Some sick Batman villain style of buckery like that. These types of assholes almost make Lance look like a good guy. And these stealth trolls are everywhere and sometimes damn hard to identify. Why? Because they just might be your best friend. Or maybe even your significant other. We've all had friends like that, which I suppose are not friends at all. They're really frenemies, right? Guys or girls who not only don't root for you, they secretly pray for your failure. I first mentioned psychic vampires in episode 3, Secrets to Your Best Year Ever. And using the word pointy to describe women who can enslave men with their looks, a term which is my sole invention and appears to be finally becoming an American idiom. The phrase psychic vampires was popularized not by me, but by a character named Anton LaVey, the self-proclaimed Black Pope, even though he was white, and author of best-selling book called The Satanic Bible. It was a goofy little book, but the 24-carat nugget within it was the term psychic vampire. The most insidious thing about vampires, whether physical or psychological or emotional, is the way they operate in stealth and secrecy. They drain their victims, usually without the host's knowledge. Mosquitoes are vampires, right? And when they stick their disgusting needle nose in our flesh, they actually secrete an anesthetic that numbs our skin, so we are unaware we are being bled. And psychic vampires operate in much the same way. They usually blow some rah-rah smoke in our faces first, so we're unaware of their true intentions. What kind of smoke? Maybe they make us laugh or throw out a few compliments as a false flag. Sexual relationships complicate the hell out of it and make identifying a psychic vampire damned near impossible. Because if someone can make you feel so good in bed, it's difficult to understand they might be making you feel lousy elsewhere. If you think about it for a while, you'll start to see the psychic vampires in your life. It's like those images people post on Facebook, right? The ones that say, "Can you spot the snake in this pile of leaves?" You have to stare at it a really long time. Sometimes we never spot the psychic vampire until we're fully drained. How soon does it start? Would you believe at birth? When my first kid was born, during a congratulatory call from someone I'd known for years. This guy and I had been friends in L.A. for years, used to hang together and hoist a few, until he was promoted to a gig in Aruba, of all places. So we'd talk on the phone and shoot an email now and then. And so I call him to tell him, hey, I've got a daughter. And there's a ton of these calls for your firstborn. And usually they ask stuff like, how long was mom in labor? How much does the baby weigh? What color hair and eyes? Stuff like that. But the first thing this guy asks me is, what were her APGAR scores? And I'm like, her what scores? What the fuck are those? And he tells me, they evaluate the kid's color and respiration and reflexes, things like that. And so I told him no one at the hospital had performed any tests like that on my kid. And then he says, really? What hospital was that? Right? A little bit of the put-down in that delivery. And in that one phone call, I had a huge epiphany about this guy. Everything with him was a comparison, a contest. There was no real friendship. You know, there's nothing wrong with a contest when both parties are aware, but this guy was keeping score on every fucking thing. He'd had his first kid a few months before I did, and I genuinely congratulated him and sent him some baby gift, and now what he wanted to know was, how can I compare my kid to your kid? And maybe, based on a fucking APGAR score, my kid will somehow be better than your kid. And I realized that this was all that really motivated this shithead. And I began to recall the idiotic questions he'd asked over the years. How's your 401k doing? Translation, I hope mine is bigger. So how did you do in your SATs? Which colleges accepted you? I always thought that they were just off-the-wall questions because I simply could not give a fuck about those things. SATs and college acceptances and GPAs. Who cares about that shit once it's behind you? Well, he did. Because with him, it was a never-ending process of competitive calibration. But it took the baby thing to finally wake me up and make me see clearly. Here was the single most fantastic occurrence of my life, of anybody's life. And this fucktard was trying to measure it against his own. How fucked up. And since we just mentioned colleges, here's a quick thought about that. People obsessed with their alma maters are usually people for whom their college years were the zenith of their lives, which, if that is the case, says loud and clear that their college was a colossal waste of time. College is supposed to prepare people for a career, right? And a career, if it's a good one, if it's one where someone's managed to make a living doing what they love, a career can span a lifetime. When people love what they do, retirement isn't even a part of their vocabulary. And so when you see the back of a vehicle plastered with college decals, what it usually says is, I peaked at 22, and now I live in the past. There's nothing wrong with competition. Who can belch the loudest, drink the most, piss off the teacher fastest, skip a rock the farthest, that's all fun. But when both competitors are aware it is a competition, when one isn't, it's psychic vampirism. If we think back in our lives, we can identify psychic vampires from the very beginning right up to this instant. Santa brings little 4-year-old Bobby a shiny new tricycle. And before he pedals it 9 feet from his own front door, there's his best pal, he thinks, Richie. Richie sees Bobby's trike.
Hey, Johnny, let me try it.
Being a nice little dude, Bobby hops off and Richie gets aboard. He rides around a while, probably too long for a test ride. And when he gets off, what does he say?
Hey, Johnny, cool bike.
No, This little douchebag, Richie, says,
"Did you see Joel's new bike? He's got a two-wheeler. Your bike is for babies."
In that moment, unless he's been raised in the take-no-shit dojo, Bobby's treasured new tricycle has already lost its luster, and his blissful Christmas just turned to shit. All because of a little psychic vampire named Richie. Of course, it's a safe bet Richie has no bike at all, or maybe it's a rusty bucket of bolts. And if allowed to stay on his present path without being smacked down, Richie will spend his entire worthless life doing the same damn thing to everyone he meets. When Richie grows up, he just might find employment on Madison Avenue, where the real crux of marketing is not selling anything, but sowing the seeds of discontent. And so begins the tale of Bobby the Sound Man, a lifelong victim of psychic vampires. I've always been a shooter, and there was a time I was heavily into skeet shooting. I mean, at least every weekend and sometimes one or two nights a week. Not too different than bowling or golf, I suppose, but much more useful for Teotwaki or Shit Hits the Fan. And if you want to hear more about those, you might have a listen to Episode 7, Larry Preps. Now, for the non-shooters out there, when you shoot skeet or trap or sporting clays, the range usually squads up 4 or 5 guys. Maybe you arrive with a group of guys you already know, or maybe you're solo. And most of the time, the guys were okay. And even if they weren't, nobody ever got hot under the collar on a gun range. Everybody's really polite. As they said in the Old West, God created men. Sam Colt made them equal. And that is never more evident than on a shooting range. So one afternoon, I get put on a squad with Bobby. Nice guy. And he's wearing a crew jacket from a major motion picture that was just about to be released. And he tells me he's a sound guy. And he's got loads of these cool stories about shit he's heard through his headphones. Big stars saying and doing things when they forgot they were still wearing radio mics off stage and in their trailers. And so Bobby is shooting a very nice Beretta shotgun. Now, a big part of psychic vampirism is one-upsmanship, right? And is in any endeavor with equipment that costs a few bucks, you're always going to run across the equipment junkies and whores. Usually, they're guys of minimal talent, but believe that owning some high-end anything will imbue them with the talents of the masters. Guitars may be the most common arena for this behavior. Three-chord Johnnies who own exotic Gibsons and Martins and Fenders and D'Angelicos and so on. It's really weird. Meanwhile, you know that true virtuosos can pick up any cheap piece of shit and play it to make you weep. And doubtless that's the same thing with golf and tennis and whatever. And as long as I'm talking about tennis, answer me this. We've all been to baseball games where 10-year-old boys bring their mitts, hoping to grab a ball hit into the stands, right? But I've been to many U.S. Opens and seen grown women, usually women for some reason, sitting there with their rackets in their laps, as if Venus or Serena should turn an ankle, some official is going to look into the stands and go, hey, you lady, yeah, you with the Prince racket in the third row, want to come down here and finish this set while Venus gets her ankle iced? What the fuck is wrong with people? But back to Bobby the sound guy. So Bobby was shooting a very nice Beretta shotgun, probably cost around a couple of grand at that time. And again, for the non-shotgunners out there, here's a quick note. Some ancient $200 rusty used shotgun does not shoot one bit less accurately than some custom masterpiece costing tens of thousands. The only difference is cosmetic. Exotic woods and recoil-absorbing add-ons and so on are what separate the garden-variety guns from the museum-quality ones. That's it. Anyone who says otherwise is full of shit. And so, here's this guy we often shoot with, Derek. He's kind of like Richie, but all grown up. Alimony's at the ass, always working an angle. Shifty, you know. And one day he says to Bobby, "Hey, Bobby, does that Beretta really fit you okay?" And Bobby's like, "What do you mean?" And Derek goes into this whole rap about how the gun just doesn't seem to work for him and Zama Zama bullshit bullshit. And by the time we're done for the day, I can see Derek has Bobby believing that this very nice Beretta shotgun is basically a Fisher-Price toy. And so the next time I see Bobby in the skeet field, he's got himself a vintage Winchester worth several thousand bucks. Bobby lets me shoot it for a round. Nice gun. Better than the Beretta he had? No. But Bobby loves this Winchester. Says it's the gun he'll be winning tournaments with. I ask him what he did with the Beretta. He tells me he sold it to Derek for a very low price. I ask him why so cheap, and he tells me how Derek told him that if he gave it to a gun shop on consignment, it might sit there forever, and then there'd be a fat commission to pay and Zama Zama bullshit bullshit. So not only is Derek a psychic vampire, he's got his fangs into Bobby, because he realizes he can pick up some pretty snappy bargains just by whispering a few discouraging words in Bobby's ear. Now, when you shoot skeet, you shoot at 25 so-called birds. They resemble little clay frisbees about 5 inches in diameter. They are made of the same stuff as cheap flower pots, and just as brittle. And the object is to shoot all 25 of these birds without missing any. Great shooters can break hundreds, even thousands, consecutively. So 25 birds is no big deal. It's kind of like a learner's permit if you're driving. But Bobby had yet to break his 25 birds, and he wanted those badly. When you do it, some ranges give you a little patch for your shirt or shooting vest. The patch probably costs 50 cents, and those clay birds are probably less than a penny apiece to manufacture. So Bobby had this real nice Jeep he'd drive to the range, white, with all the bells and whistles, and was so fresh off the lot it still had that new car smell. And one day we see him drive onto the lot in a Toyota 4Runner with the dealer sticker still in the window. And everybody tells him, "Nice ride, Bobby." And I just gotta ask, so I do, "Bobby, how many miles did you have on that Jeep?" "Oh, about 7,000, he says. Now, Bobby and I and a handful of other guys are sitting outside the snack shop as this conversation is taking place. And somebody says, "Gee, Bobby, that's awfully soon to be trading a new car. What was wrong with it?" And Bobby says, "Well, there are situations it just couldn't handle, like the 4Runner. It just wasn't as rugged. And you can't beat the resale on a Toyota." So I ask him what he did with the Jeep. And he tells me Derek took it off his hands. And right about then we see Bobby's Jeep roll into the parking lot with Derek grinning ear to ear. And then Wide Body Tom spoke up. Now, Wide Body was about 5'7" and 3'10". He was from up Wyoming way, or maybe the Dakotas. And besides a fondness for Spam straight out of the can, he put away several packs of Camels a day and sounded like it. And Tom says, "Good thing you don't have a wife, Bobby. Derek would be driving her any day now." And so we continue to shoot, and Bobby continues not to achieve the coveted 25 straight birds. To him, the holy grail of the sport. And so he starts taking shooting lessons from 2 different instructors on alternate days. He wants that 25 straight patch. When Bobby was doing a movie, he was never around but making really good money, which he'd blow on lunacy when he was not working, like now. And then one day Bobby missed a few birds, and there's another guy in the squad shooting a Krieghoff K80, which in shotgun circles might be considered the equivalent of maybe a Bentley or a Maybach Benz. And the guy breaks 25 birds, and I can see Bobby's eyes get wide, and the thought balloon over his head is, it's gotta be the gun. And he asks the guy about his Krieghoff And what's the guy going to say? He shelled out maybe 15 grand for it, so of course he's going to say it's a fantastic shotgun. But Bobby has selective vision, because in that same round of skeet, Wide Body Tom had also broken 25, probably the second time that day, and he'd done it with some banged-up old piece of shit gun he probably fished out of a junk pile. And I'm wondering, where the hell is Derek? Because I get a feeling there's going to be a very nice vintage Winchester for sale, cheap, any minute now. And a couple of weeks go by, and I see Bobby out at the range, and he's still got his Winchester, and I'm wondering if he either came to his senses or finally ran out of fun money. So we start talking. Sure enough, he bought himself a brand new Krieghoff, but he was having some custom work done on it, like a shock-absorbing add-on called a hydrocoil. It's kind of like a spring-loaded sleeve they fit into the butt to lessen the effects of a 12-gauge kick. But the wood has to match perfectly. And then a bunch of other technical stuff that's supposed to make an already perfect shotgun shoot even better. All in pursuit of that straight 25. Bobby was what you'd call a hardcore hobbyist. And millions of guys are, whether it's rare coins or stamps or war or sports memorabilia. But for most guys, it's a long-term, sometimes a lifetime obsession. But Bobby would go full bore on whatever it was and then lose interest at a substantial financial loss and then move on to the next fixation. I had a feeling that would happen the moment he finally broke his 25 straight. And somebody, maybe Derek, would be able to purchase a lot of shotgun stuff at fire sale prices. So one day out at the range, Wide Body Tom and Derek the Weasel and I and a few other guys are relaxing between skeet rounds. And along comes Bobby in his new Toyota 4Runner. He parks it right next to the nearly new Jeep Derek had relieved him of at a deep discount. And then Bobby unloads his new custom-fitted, tailored, polished, hydrocoiled over-under Krieghoff K80 shotgun with the screw-in chokes and lengthened forcing cones and parkerized receiver, zippity-doo-dah. And when he sets the gun on the picnic table in its custom-fitted shockproof AmeriCase, you would have thought it held the crown jewels. But before Bobby can open it and show off his gun, he hooks a thumb under his shooting vest, showcasing a bright red and yellow patch that says, 25 straight. So we all congratulate him and shake his hand on his accomplishment, and he was just beaming. He takes a seat. And he's proud as hell. And then he says, I just wish you guys were there to see me do it. And he explains how he finally got his 25 straight a couple of nights ago when he was out here training with one of his shooting coaches. I assured him it made no difference, that we were just as happy for him without witnessing his breaking 25 straight. And Wide Body Time says, you know, Bobby, I've known all along that pretty soon you'd be breaking 25 straight. I knew you could do it. And so I have prepared a proper gift to commemorate your achievement. Wide Body Tom was one of those guys who did a bunch of things on the side. No one ever knew what his main gig was. And one of those side jobs was making plaques and trophies. And you can see Bobby is really touched. His eyes are practically misting. But Wide Body Tom was a fat rascal with a twisted sense of humor. And I'm wondering where this is going. And he reaches into his bag and pulls out a fancy box about the size of a shallow shoebox. It was covered in red velvet and hinged at the side so it opened long ways like a book. This was before they were unboxing things on YouTube. But Tom's presentation was very similar in pace and style. Very slow, very deliberate, with the intent of building suspense. We're all on the edge of our seats. Bobby is now blinking to hold back tears of appreciation. Tom opens the box, holds it to one side for all to admire like some chick hawking jewelry on QVC. And in the box, on the left side, under glass, is a solitary skeet target. But instead of orange clay, it's gold. And beneath the golden target is a sparkling dollar sign followed by the number, also in gold letters, $35,000. And on the right side, also nestled in thick crimson velvet, is an engraved plaque. Wide Body Tom sweeps a pudgy hand over the inscription with a flourish and says,
"Allow me to read it for all. This commemorative trophy, presented to Bobby Dayton, signifies both his marksmanship and sportsmanship."
I look at Bobby. Yep, that's definitely a tear rolling down his cheek. Tom continues,
"For only a shotgunner with a true passion and love for the sport would blow $25,000 on guns and at least another $10,000 on lessons to blow a fucking flying ashtray out of the sky and win a patch for his vest worth 50 fucking cents."
Bobby never shot skeet again. He sold the custom Krieg off, the loading machines, and all the apparatus. He wound up getting injured on a movie set and moved up to the Northwest on a disability pension. Last I heard, he was into customized Harleys. I guess he wasn't all that disabled. But I bet his biker vest has patches aplenty. So Bobby was a classic victim of psychic vampires. Thanks for hanging with me at the dojo, my friends. And allow me to take care of a bit of housekeeping. This month, and perhaps next month as well, there will be a slight adjustment to the schedule here at the Take No Shit Dojo. A couple of projects have arisen that demand my attention. So for this month, there will be only 4 episodes instead of 5. The first 3 will be general distribution, followed by a 4th, available only on Patreon. However, there's always the possibility of a special emergency episode, as we had for the United Airlines fiasco. Maybe World War III will break out. If so, stay tuned. Now, if you like what you hear, please tell all your friends. If you really like what you hear, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow and join the dojo for special rewards and bonus episodes. And the dojo store is now open, where you can get an official TNS Dojo t-shirt in Gunfighter Black. It puts the world on notice, discreetly. Just click the store link on thatlarryshow.com. We love to hear from you, so get at us at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or call us at 302-71-LARRY. If you have a problem, we have a sensei that can help you with it. And don't forget to tweet at us. My friends, there's no reason any of us should ever fall prey to psychic vampires. There's a simple way to render ourselves impervious to their soul-crushing tricks and schemes. We need only listen to our own feelings and be ready to jettison anyone at any time. It's that easy. I'll see you next Tuesday, right here, at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.